Welcome. This is the first of two lectures which serve as an introduction to the subject of studying the culture of healthcare and healthcare professionals. It is meant as an introductory unit for a full course on the culture of healthcare, covering the people who work in healthcare, the settings in which healthcare is delivered, the practices and processes of healthcare delivery, some of the professional values, beliefs, and ethics which drive that behavior, and how health information technologies interact with healthcare professionals in their work. In this first lecture, we discuss what we mean by the word culture when we talk about healthcare and healthcare professionals. In a second lecture, we will discuss why this is important and how we can learn more about it. But first, let's define some terms. We talk a lot about healthcare, healthcare professionals, health information technology, but what do we mean by these terms? Well, first, let's define disease and illness. Kleinman, in an often cited 1978 article, emphasized the distinction between disease and illness. According to Kleinman, when we talk about disease, we are referring to malfunction or maladaptation of biologic or physiologic processes. This has been the traditional focus of physicians when they diagnose and treat disease. But Kleinman emphasizes the importance of illness, referring to the individual experience of the person who is suffering, their personal, interpersonal, and cultural reactions to disease or discomfort. While disease is determined mainly by biologic and physiologic processes, illness is shaped by cultural factors that govern the perception, labeling, explanation, and valuation of the experience. To truly take care of patients requires that health professionals take into account not only the manifestations and treatment of disease, but also the patient's experience of illness in a social and cultural context. We generally think of health as referring to the absence of disease, a state of complete wellness. But in reality, this is not exactly the case. Health is relative. Most people, in fact, experience mild symptoms of one sort or another fairly frequently. This is according to national surveys of healthy people. The anthropologist Catherine Bateson points out that health is essentially an artifact of culture. That is to say, that the relatively long life expectancy and good health that most of us enjoy in modern societies is a relatively new phenomenon, in historical terms, and is an artifact of our cultural practices and technologies. It is important, also, to understand the difference in healthcare between acute illness and chronic illness. With an acute illness, most of us expect that our symptoms will be short-lived and that eventually we will be restored to our previous normal health. Examples are things like a common cold, a mild infection, or a simple fracture. On the other hand, with chronic conditions such as high blood pressure or diabetes, we expect that the condition will last indefinitely. In these situations, the goal cannot be to restore normal health. Rather, the goal of the patient and clinician alike is to maintain the highest level of function and the lowest degree of symptoms that can be achieved. Problems can arise when we confuse these. For example, when a person with a chronic illness thinks of it as an acute illness and expects to be cured and restored back to their normal state. Part of the management process in these situations is to help a person change their thinking and revise these expectations. For many people with chronic conditions such as diabetes or high blood pressure or asthma, health means that things are pretty stable, symptoms are not too troublesome, and the person is able to get on with their life and function normally, even if this requires medication. Now that we understand a little more about health, disease, and illness, we can think about what we mean by healthcare. When we look at health in the broadest sense, it is a product of broader social and environmental factors rather than just the healthcare system. Think of the effect of food, sanitation, and housing, and how these have impacted our life expectancy and quality of life in the last century or so. So health is not just the result of healthcare or the healthcare system, but rather health is the product of broader social and cultural factors. Furthermore, if we think of healthcare as actions which are principally and explicitly directed at maintaining or restoring health, then it's still true that most healthcare happens outside the healthcare system. Actions taken by the patient and family members or caregivers constitute between 70 and 90% of the healthcare that most people receive. Hence, most illness episodes never enter the professional or folk domains. For health informatics professionals, one implication of this fact is that health information technologies need to reach beyond the conventional healthcare system and health professionals, out to patients and their families, if they are to reach their full potential. Finally, we can define the healthcare system as a collection of structures and actions directed at delivering healthcare. This slide illustrates what we've been talking about. The chart shows United States mortality data for the period 1900 to 1963 for diseases including measles, scarlet fever, typhoid, whooping cough, and diphtheria. In modern times, these are all illnesses for which we have specific vaccines or medications to prevent or treat them. However, if you look at the graph, you can see that most of the improvement in mortality for these diseases happened before our modern treatments were available. Consider typhoid fever, which appears as a very dark blue line in the chart. Today, we treat this disease with antibiotics and can prevent it with an oral vaccine. But antibiotics only became available in the mid-20th century, and as you can see from the chart, typhoid fever mortality declined about tenfold before antibiotics were ever available. The improvements in the control of this disease were mainly due to improvements in sanitation, water supply, and housing. Even today, most of the deaths in persons who get treated for this illness are in those who are malnourished or otherwise in a weakened state. Similarly, mortality from measles has fallen substantially before measles vaccine became available in the 1960s. Mortality from scarlet fever had fallen dramatically before antibiotics became available in the mid-century. The point is, broad social and cultural factors such as improved sanitation, improved nutrition, reduced overcrowding, were the major contributors to reducing mortality to these serious infectious diseases. Modern treatments delivered through the healthcare system have continued to improve things, but most of what we call health in terms of our longer life expectancy and better quality of life is the result of other factors. This graphic makes a somewhat similar point about the care of chronic conditions. There is no question that the care of chronic conditions depends on the existence of modern healthcare technologies, insulin and other medications for diabetes, antihypertensive medications for blood pressure, surgical and other interventions for hardening of the arteries. However, our contemporary understanding of how persons with chronic conditions can achieve the best social and clinical outcomes is based on some variant of the chronic care model articulated by Wagner in 1998 and depicted on this slide. In this model, the existence of treatments is important, but to take best advantage requires coordinated action that incorporates community-based resources and policies, organized and accessible healthcare services, support for individual self-management, information systems and decision support that assist clinicians and patients. All of these must be working together to produce productive interactions between an informed patient and a prepared and proactive practice team. You can see that this chronic care model requires much more than a simple prescription or treatment based on an individual clinician-patient interaction. The graphic helps us remember, once again, that health is not solely the product of the healthcare system, but the result of broader community and social factors brought to bear on individual conditions. It also reminds us that health information technology can facilitate many actions and interactions in the management of chronic diseases, not simply office-based episodes between clinicians and patients. Finally, we need to come up with some kind of definition of culture. We will refine our thinking about this concept in a subsequent lecture, but for now we can use the definition provided by the Office of Minority Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. According to their definition, culture refers to an integrated pattern of human behavior that includes language, thought, communications, actions, customs, beliefs, values, and institutions of racial, ethnic, religious, or social groups. This is pretty much the conventional and historic definition that until recently most people have worked with. Another useful and somewhat shorter definition is this one from the Medical Subject Headings Index of the National Library of Medicine. According to this definition, culture is a collective expression for all behavior patterns acquired and socially transmitted through symbols. Culture includes customs, traditions, and language. Both of these definitions help us think about what we must pay attention to if we are to study and understand healthcare culture. So, if we adopt those definitions to the healthcare system, we come up with these definitions for the culture of healthcare. Using the Department of Health and Human Services definition, it would be patterns of human behavior that include the language, thoughts, communications, actions, customs, beliefs, values, and institutions of the healthcare system. Using the National Library of Medicine definition, it would be behavior patterns in the healthcare system which are acquired and socially transmitted, including customs, tradition, and language. So this would mean not only the customs, tradition, and language of doctors, nurses, and therapists, but also those of patients and families and the many other individuals who work within the many settings of our healthcare system. This slide shows some photographs that illustrate what we've been talking about. All of these photographs were taken by researchers studying the information behavior of healthcare professionals in typical healthcare settings. At top left, we see a critical care nurse working with a 3-ring binder paper-based medical chart, as well as a labeled bottle of some kind of IV medication, a large spreadsheet used as a flow sheet for patient data, and a small yellow blank sheet of paper on which she's writing personal notes. She appears to be using all these information objects at the same time. At top right is a primary care doctor using a mouse to navigate an electronic medical record on an exam room computer, while in her lap is a partly unfolded paper-based medical record. You can see that her fingers are inserted at various places in the paper record, acting as some kind of bookmarks, perhaps to help her keep her place. At bottom right, we see 3 stacks of patient records in an old paper-based format. One stack is about 6 inches high, another about 12 inches high, and the third could be 18 inches high. Large rubber bands hold together the green folders full of patient information. One thing you can tell at a glance simply by the thickness of these records is that these patients are likely to have a large and complex medical history. Finally, at bottom left is a photograph from an intensive care unit. In the foreground are 2 physicians, and in the background are several nurses, all of them looking down towards some kind of record on the counter, while around them are numerous computers. What you can't tell from this still photograph is the significant level of background noise and the constant motion of the people working in this setting. These are just some of the simple examples of the sorts of observations we can make in the field and then inquire about to learn more about the language, behavior, traditions, and customs of people who work in the healthcare system. A brief survey of what is retrieved when searching Google, Google Scholar, and the National Library of Medicine's Medline database using the search terms culture of healthcare returns mainly 4 basic themes. The first theme is the culture of patients. There was a great deal of discussion having to do with the cultural diversity of patients who are cared for in the healthcare system and the need to take into account their ethnic, racial, national, and religious considerations when providing healthcare to them. Second is the culture of the healthcare workforce. There is a discussion of workplace diversity and the need to collaborate effectively with others of diverse national, ethnic, and religious backgrounds. The third theme is the culture of organizations, including discussions of safety culture, organizational culture, a culture of innovation, measuring culture, and the like. The fourth theme is the culture of professions, including the professional culture of nurses, physicians, surgeons, traditional and alternative healers, and so forth. When we talk about the culture of patients, most of the contemporary literature discusses either problems with the inequities in healthcare that is received by persons of other cultures, or the need to understand and adjust to the beliefs and values of specific cultures who encounter the healthcare system. Inequities in healthcare are the result not only of social and economic factors which make healthcare less accessible to some, but also the result of differences in language and the concepts and models of illness. Individuals dealing with our healthcare system who come from another culture and speak another language have a potential problem of understanding that reaches deeper than just language. In many cases, their concepts of illness and causes of diseases are fundamentally different, so that translation of the language alone is not sufficient. These differences can mean that clinicians may not understand the patient, and the patient may not understand the clinician, with the result that the appropriateness or effectiveness of care may be threatened. Much is being written of late about cultural competence and the need for culturally sensitive care. Large organizations such as healthcare systems must train their workforce in order to deliver appropriate and culturally sensitive care to all who present themselves. Modern urban hospitals with great cultural diversity of cities are not the only institutions that must address these issues. Many smaller clinics and critical access hospitals in rural areas are similarly likely to encounter significant cultural diversity in their patient populations and workforce populations, although the resources available to address these differences may be much less. There are many categories or dimensions of these differences and cultural variations that can lead to problems of effective communication and appropriate care. Some are based on geography or geographic origin, such as Southeast Asia or African American. Some are based on religious differences, such as the Hmong or Islam. Others are based on differences of language, such as Spanish-speaking people, including the many geographic variations in Spanish, or Telugu, and other languages on the Indian subcontinent. Still others may be related to cultural groups, such as the Romani or Gypsy people. And then there are special groups, such as the deaf, street culture, adolescent culture, which may need to be addressed in specific ways depending on their healthcare needs. Each of the groups that we have mentioned may have specific beliefs, values, or practices that must be understood when they encounter our healthcare system if we are to deliver effective healthcare. We refer to this as cultural competence. This refers to an awareness of and a respect for cultural differences. It is especially important in this regard to avoid cultural stereotypes that may or may not apply to a given individual, and not to assume that because a person belongs to a particular cultural group, that they uniformly share and adhere to some stereotype about that group's beliefs. The bottom line is that each person has to be approached as an individual. There is no cookie-cutter approach. Some of the issues that need to be considered include things like traditional beliefs about transfusions and vaccines, or modesty issues when conducting a physical examination. We can adopt this same notion of cultural competence to our dealings with other groups in the healthcare system. When we think about the healthcare workforce, it is easy to bring with us stereotypes about the different health professionals and their behaviors. A third theme that one finds in surveying healthcare culture deals with the culture of the workforce itself. This includes issues such as the cultural diversity of work groups, such as nurses on a nursing unit, issues relating to the culture of physicians, especially gender, race, and ethnicity, the cultural diversity that arises with increasing numbers of international medical graduates who trained elsewhere in the world and come to the United States to practice, and the impact of the culture of these health professionals on patient care. In this brief survey, there is not time to discuss all of these issues, though many of them may become apparent or important as our study of the healthcare culture continues in other units. One area that is receiving increasing attention, with the current emphasis on medical errors and patient safety, is the concept of just culture. The concept of just culture is more easily understood when contrasted with the blame culture that sometimes exists in organizations and can interfere with organizational learning and improvement. What we refer to as the blame culture is characterized by high levels of organizational rigidity, by an emphasis on strict compliance with existing practices. A blame culture can easily fall unintentionally into becoming overly rigid and rule-oriented when there is a focus on assigning blame to individuals for system failures. The result for members of such organizations is fear of punishment, a tendency to avoid risk and to distrust. The predominant response to error or near misses in these situations becomes silence because workers are afraid to come forward. Contrast this with the so-called just culture. This is characterized by organizational learning, by an environment in which members believe it is okay to question existing practices, where management expresses an openness to worker input. Such environments have an overall commitment to quality. Ideally, this will lead to uninhibited reporting of problems, to extensive information sharing about problems, and to organizational responses that follow up with remediation directed at not at removing offending individuals, but rather improving processes through staff training and the like. In healthcare, a just culture means that healthcare workers believe that they are safe to report problems, to question practices, and that they are invested in quality improvement. A third common theme in the literature on culture and healthcare is concerned with the culture of organizations. Much is being written about the desirable properties of organizations, such as a culture of innovation or a culture of health and employee wellness. In healthcare settings, organizational culture is often concerned with maintaining a culture of privacy with regard to patient health information, a culture of cost-effectiveness, and a culture of safety. This interest in organizational culture has led to a great deal of research on understanding and measuring culture, in particular, measuring for the presence of a safety culture and understanding the process of cultural change, which has obvious relevance to the introduction of major disruptive changes such as new health information technology. Safety culture has received a great deal of attention as it relates so strongly not only to workforce safety, such as fewer needle sticks and other on-the-job injuries, but also because it is so important for patient safety. This slide lists some features of a safety culture in an organization. First, safety culture is a concept defined at the group level, referring to shared values among all members of the group. Second, safety culture is concerned with formal safety issues in the organization, including its management and supervisory systems. Third, safety culture emphasizes the contribution from everyone at every level of the organization. Fourth, safety culture has an impact on members' behavior at work, which is usually reflected in a relationship between reward systems and safety performance. Safety culture, as we discussed in a previous slide, is reflected in an organization's willingness to develop and learn from errors, incidents, and accidents. Finally, safety culture, when present, should be relatively enduring, stable, and resistant to change. Confirming some of these concepts is the results of this survey that looked at what works to produce a climate of safety. In healthcare, the evidence suggests that a climate of safety exists when many elements are working together. First, a management commitment to safety. Second, explicit safety practices and behaviors in the organization. Third, safety knowledge and training programs among the membership. Fourth, safety communication. Fifth, safety equipment and supplies. These factors are indicators that the climate of safety exists, and working together can improve patient safety. We now turn to the fourth major theme in the literature on the culture of healthcare, health professional culture. This refers to the beliefs, values, and practices of the professions themselves. Much of this literature discusses comparisons of Western biomedicine, or allopathic medicine, to other traditions such as osteopathic medicine, as well as comparisons of complementary and alternative medicines such as traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, naturopathic, or homeopathic practice. These healthcare practice traditions differ not only in the treatments and interventions they provide, but in the underlying belief systems about the causes and consequences of illness on which those treatments are based. Also prominent in the literature on healthcare culture are discussions of the cultures which are specific to individual professions, such as nursing culture or physician culture. Nursing culture may be characterized, for example, as a holistic and caring profession. Physicians may be characterized as being focused on diseases, expressing a benign paternalism, and placing great importance on autonomy. Closer examination reveals that the culture of health professionals is often more fine-grained than that, with differences existing between the culture of surgical practice compared to medical practice, or differences among the distinct cultures of critical care units, operating rooms, and emergency rooms. The closer we look at the culture of healthcare, the more cultures we find are operative. In fact, of course, the culture of biomedicine includes more than just professional culture of nurses, physicians, and other health professionals. Modern healthcare settings also include the relatively distinct cultures of management, business, IT, and so forth. We can get some sense that differences exist between these interacting cultures from their language. For example, consider the words used to refer to the individuals that these groups serve. From the business point of view, they are customers. From the IT point of view, they are users. For the librarian, they're patrons. Counselors and therapists may call them clients, while most doctors and many nurses refer to them as patients. Each of these terms may be used for the same individual when interacting with different parts of the healthcare system, and these terms imply differences in underlying assumptions about their relationship. To summarize, based on this brief survey of contemporary literature about the culture of healthcare, we can make the following observations. First, most of this literature is about other cultures, that is, one culture describing another. Less often is it about any particular culture describing itself. This is consistent with the notion that one's culture is transparent, that is, the culture you don't notice is your own. We'll talk more about this in a second lecture of this unit. Second, this brief survey shows us that there are an enormous number of resources available to learn more about these various cultures in healthcare, which are easily found on the Internet. Third, these discussions bring up the question of acculturation. We usually think about acculturation with respect to an individual moving from one culture to another and adapting to the language, beliefs, and practices of that culture. This happens, for example, when a person moves from the United States to another country, or vice versa. We can also think about acculturation with respect to individuals who move from outside the healthcare system to inside the healthcare system, and must adapt to the beliefs and practices and language of the healthcare system. This happens, of course, when IT professionals or others move from outside the healthcare system and must become acculturated to it. To summarize the main points of this lecture, first, culture, as it is used in relation to healthcare, has many meanings that are relevant to healthcare and health information technology. Second, healthcare takes place in a complex mix of cultures, professional, organizational, and so forth. Third, culture is not apparent from within. It is taken for granted by its members, though differences may be obvious to outsiders. Fourth, we can work more effectively when we are aware of these differences. Cultural competence can be applied not only to the interaction of health professionals with their patients, but also to the interactions between IT professionals and the healthcare system. It becomes evident that one job of biomedical informatics professionals is to bridge these cultures and translate across the boundaries. We can do this by learning more about the healthcare culture, which is the subject of the second lecture in this Introduction to Healthcare Culture.